because you're in the military and you have the blended retirement system, you are automatically, you've been given like a golden ticket into the top 10% of retirees by income. And those are people who are making in retirement at least 72 to 80,000 and up to, you know, six figures. We're not even counting the ultra high net worth people who make, you know, $1 million a year. But you're going to be fine, right? Like if the average cost of living is 48,872, with the blended retirement system, which gives you the pension and the thrift savings plan, when you add Social Security to that, you're guaranteeing yourself at least $75,000-$80,000, if not a six-figure retirement income. Welcome to Service and Wealth, the podcast dedicated to helping military personnel master their finances and achieve financial freedom. Our mission is to guide you through the ins and outs of planning, saving, and investing, and most importantly, how to balance savings so you can enjoy life now and retire with confidence. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, happy Sunday, happy Monday, whatever day, you know, you might be listening. We're back here with the Service and Wealth podcast, and this is, it's Sunday, September 15th, and so we've got this in two more Sundays to go this month. We're kind of coupling the podcast with our blog to really do a deep dive into the blended retirement system. Taking a military-specific approach to retirement planning and you know, kind of, we haven't really explained, like, you know, why you need to do it or what that means, but we really want to take, you know, September as a time when we were going to bring it back to a military focus, and then, you know, in October or November, we'll probably drift back towards just talking about investing in general. We'll start doing, you know, talking about the VA loan a little bit and real estate. I think it'll be a good timing because it looks like the Federal Open Market Committee or the Federal Reserve is going to be, and that's, you know, the chairman is Jerome Powell. So maybe you haven't heard about the Fed or the FOMC, but you've probably heard about Jerome Powell, Jay Powell. And it looks fairly convincing that they're going to start, quote unquote, cutting interest rates. You know, and the big debate is what's going to happen to the economy. You know, some people say this is going to be great for the stock market. It's going to be great for the housing market. It's going to be great for real estate investors and commercial and everybody because they're going to be able to borrow money at a lower interest rate, which means you can get more for the same or you can get an amount for less. And so, you know, we've had a blog post just a couple weeks ago in which we looked at the last couple times that the Fed started cutting interest rates, and it was out of concern about things like COVID or the China trade war and possibilities that could lead to a recession. And the result was that, in fact, what you saw, you know, happen was kind of what you would expect. Like, it became cheaper to borrow money. More people started borrowing money and investing. They were less worried about their own savings. And also, you know, if interest rates are lower, you don't want so much money in, you know, bonds and cash and high yield savings accounts or certificates of deposit because they earn less money for you. So now it becomes more appealing to be invested in the stock market. And so, of course, you know, the stock market after each of those last two episodes kind of like went rip roaring up. And if you were invested in the stock market, you made a lot of money. And at this point, pretty much everybody in uniform in the U.S. military from any of the branches, including, you know, our brothers and sisters over there in Title 22 land with the Coast Guard and Homeland Defense and other federal, you know, national security agencies, because you have the Thrift Savings Plan, which nests under the blended retirement system now. And, you know, it used to be sort of an optional voluntary thing to participate in, but now everyone is kind of forced to do it. And so we're going to, you know, we we kind of have this forecast of what we think could likely happen with stocks. We don't really know, but the one thing we do know is interest rates coming down are going to be favorable for people who want to borrow money in order to buy a house. And the easiest way to explain that is, you know, if you need a $300,000 loan to buy a house and the payment on that is $2,000, well, call it like $2,500 a month, and you only make $5,000 a month, which is not too unusual in the military, you're not going to qualify because it costs too much. But if the interest rates go down and then you can, instead of $2,500 a month for your payment, you can get it for a $2,150 a month payment, voila, you magically will qualify for that loan and now you can buy a house, right? And so now more people are buying the house. Maybe somebody who's a bit more conservative is like, well, I was only going to spend $2,000 on a mortgage and I could only get a $200,000 loan for that, but now I can afford a $250,000 loan, so I'll spend more, you know? So those are the things that we expect to be coming up here by the end of the month, by the end of September. We'll know next week, or this week, I should say. we'll know this week, and there's still a good bet that it'll happen more than once, like a rate cut in September and a rate cut in October, and then maybe one more. We'll see what happens. It doesn't really matter, but for that reason, I think, you know, October will be a good time to start talking about how that all relates to the VA loan and home loans in general, and kind of help you guys get a better understanding of what it takes to qualify and what the standards are and how you should really kind of look at it. And, you know, so yeah, I think that would be a good transition. And then for the rest of this month, we're just going to focus on the blended retirement system. So good information that will apply inside and outside the military, because, you know, just because the blended retirement system here doesn't mean it's not something similar elsewhere. And also the same with real estate. So even if you're, you know, going to get out in 4 years, and within that 4 years, you don't expect to have enough cash saved up to, you know, buy a house, which that's got to be close to impossible to say if you are in the military and qualify for the VA loan. But we'll get on into that later. So today, this week we're talking about blended retirement system. And what we want to do is we want to try to go big to small. And I realize that's a little bit tricky because, you know, when you're in the military and you're going to go out on an op and you get your operations order briefed to you, you know, usually depending on what kind of unit you're with, you might have just a map or, you know, map, a sand table. Maybe you'd like carve something out on the ground. You know, my background is a tank officer. And so one of the first experiences I had when, as a young lieutenant, I showed up as a second lieutenant deployed we were out of there like just over 60 days after we got there. And then we got back in late summer, and rather than kicking out on leave, we lieutenants got assigned to support a big exercise. And so, you know, it's like 100 degrees, and we were just standing out there around a terrain model that was like 60 feet on a side. Like, it was huge. I'm glad I didn't have to build it, but it was the way to understand the whole big picture first before we started telling people like, okay, this little thing. And I think that makes sense too when we're talking about the blended retirement system. You know, I can't just go straight in and say like, all right, so log into MyPay if you are an O-1 with less than 1 year time in service, and tell MyPay to put 16% of your base pay into your TSP, and then on then go log into your TSP account and allocate it 100% to the C fund, right? Like, you can mechanically do that, but you don't really know the why, and you don't know the big picture, and that's kind of important, because most of the mistakes that people end up making in the military with their blended retirement system benefits, including the Thrift Savings Plan, TSP, is they don't really understand like how everything relates into a bigger picture. And that's one of the core things that we do here at the Military Wealth Coach is try to like take the big picture, do all the big thinking and the big numbers, and then provide some just action items, right? Like just tasks, like you're the breach force on order, you know, secure objective A or whatever. That's kind of like the investment tip or strategy. Now, before we talk about it, you know, obviously I just said something that could be misunderstood, misinterpreted as investment advice. Just remember, everything that we do here on this channel, it should not be thought of as financial, legal, tax advice. They're strategies, they're tips, they're street smarts and experiences and influences that we've had along the way that we're sharing with the community to help you build your financial IQ. As always, you need to do your own analysis, make your own decisions, and then I never really say this, but like own the consequences, right? You know, like I was just looking at my portfolio yesterday because I noticed that there are some headlining AI stocks that a few years ago, you know, just bought a few thousand dollars of them. And I was looking in there and I was like, oh, look at that winner. Like, that's great. And then like right next to it was one that wasn't doing good. That can happen, right? Like there's risk of loss in any investment. And once you choose a strategy, the best thing you can do is stay consistent. And then if you find that it's not working or there are things that didn't quite pan out, like have a plan to get out of it, get away from it, protect yourself and not lose as much as you could if you're just kind of like ignorant and like following somebody else's plan. And that, you know, you're just as likely to have things like that, whether you're working randomly on your own or you're, you know, teaching yourself and building your financial education and IQ, because it's all random, like loss happens. But anyway, so there's a disclaimer. So let's, before we talk about the blended retirement system itself, let's just talk about retirement in general and what retirement is, okay? Ask yourself, do you know when you can retire? Like, what's the answer to that question? How old are you? Do you have to be to retire? Well, your answer is probably going to follow something that is set by the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, or the Social Security Administration. The real answer is you can retire whenever you want to. And then like the footnote is like, so long as you have enough income to survive and take care of yourself and your family, right? But like a lot of people talk about financial independence or financial freedom. Well, technically that is kind of retirement, right? Like once you have enough money coming in from your investment accounts, then you can retire. But there are ages. There are ages that matter. And the most commonly thrown about age is 59 and a half. Everybody's talking about 59 and a half, 59 and a half. And why is that? Well, the IRS decided that it makes sense that you can start taking money from your retirement accounts, and that can be your thrift savings plan. It can be an individual retirement account, an IRA. It can be a 401k from your next job. You know, if you leave the military and then you become a DoD contractor, 403Bs for those who go into the healthcare or like not for nonprofit. You know, there's a lot of these different programs, and they're specifically categorized as retirement plans. And so, and the reason why that is because we'll get to it here in just a second, is like Americans traded a sure thing, a pension, for kind of this stock market gamble retirement savings program. And in order for workers like you and I, you know, to feel like it was going to be fair, we get some tax advantages. Okay. So 59 and a half is kind of like thrown around as like, that's early retirement. 62, that's a number. A lot of people retire at age 62 in America, and mostly women retire at 62. And that is because at 62, you become eligible to start receiving early Social Security benefits. Now, why do women do that? Well, that's because the majority of married couples in the United States are a man and a woman. I don't know how the Social Security Administration handles it. You know, if they even see gender, but the reason is that most women earn less, right? I think we know right now women earn for like technically doing the same job and the same educational level attained. Like if you had a woman and a man who each had a master's in education and they went in to become high school teachers. And I don't know this for a fact. I haven't looked up high school, maybe high school and like teaching and that whole industry is like more tightly regulated, but on average, the woman will make 81 cents on the dollar. And I think that's current as of like 2022 or 23. So pretty current that there's still an income gap. And the Social Security Administration counts your benefit that you get once you retire, once you are 62 or older, they base it on your lifetime earnings. So all things being equal, you know, if you have a married couple and the man has been making $100,000 a year and the woman has been making $81,000, and I should point out, right, it's not all like in the past 50 years, America's come a long way in terms of like building up income equality in the workforce, first for women and then for people of color. And, you know, we're not there yet, right? We're not to the place we should be where it's equal pay for equal work, but we're getting close. And even if we do get to the same salary or effective hourly wage, over the course of a lifetime, a married woman will still make less than the married man because she's going to take a career time out to, even if it's just for 1 year, right, to have one kid. Those times out of the workforce do reduce the employee's, you know, earnings. So in the future, right? So like maybe they're totally equal. They're both making like 30,000, 35, 40, 45. And then from age 32 to 36, like the wife is out of the workforce for 4 years and has two kids and gets them into like preschool or nursery or whatever you want to call it. And now over those 4 years, the husband's advanced up to 60,000 and she's still lagging, you know, at 50. And that difference, she can't, you know, outwork him at that point. All things being equal, right? We're not trying to get too deep in the mud here with gender in the workplace. But then when they hit 62, right, like the Social Security Administration looks and they're like, okay, the married man made $1 million. And so he's going to get an annual payout of $30,000. And the married woman in that couple has a lifetime earnings of $810,000. So she's going to get an annual Social Security benefit of only $20,000, right? And so it makes sense for, we won't do the math today, right? But it makes sense for the woman to like take the 20, retire at 62, and for the man to keep working to 67 when he hits full retirement age and he can get his full benefit. Now they're going to get, you know, like $50,000 in Social Security. He had to work an extra, you know, 4.5, 5 years. But now they're getting $50,000. And when he passes, then, and he, you know, statistically, the man's going to die about 5 years before the woman. When he dies, now the highest benefit between the two of them continues on for the surviving spouse. So, like, if they had both stopped early at the same level, or, you know, she had kept working, it just doesn't, the math just doesn't work out. So like that's the traditional strategy for Social Security is that whoever earned the less in their career, which has typically been the married woman, but we can just say the partner who earned less over their whole career, they'll retire at 62 and then the other partner will keep working until 67. Okay. And so that 67 is now like that third big age for retirement planning. And then for some of us, like if you're in your 50s right now, like you're retired, well, even somebody in their 40s, 73 is also an important age to think about because at 73, the IRS forces you to start taking money from your retirement accounts and specifically from your Roth retirement account. I shouldn't say all of them, just from your Roth retirement accounts. Oh, there's a bug in my face. And they tell you how much to take. So that can have some pretty serious tax consequences. And so most people don't want that to happen. They don't want at that age to be told that they have to take out, you know, 5-6% of their retirement savings per year if they haven't already started, right? And if you have that much money that you didn't need your retirement income, you know, you got to just hire a tax accountant and like a financial planner, and they'll help you so you can survive that what's called required minimum distribution. For anybody in uniform right now, that age is going to be 75 by the time you get there. So you really have this window in which traditional retirement has to happen sometime between 59 and a half and 75. And it's based on when you can take income from the Social Security Administration and from your retirement accounts, okay? So there's one other form of traditional retirement income, which is the pension. And we in the military are super familiar with that because that's been historically the benefit and the incentive to stick around for 20 years or longer is then you qualify for a retirement, you get the pension. We called it the Legacy High 3, in which if you stayed in for 20 years, you got 50% of the average base pay from your highest earning 36 months. And so for somebody retiring under the old legacy system, they would get anywhere from, you know, $3,000, maybe up to $5,500 or more a month. And a general officer, you know, he could or she could be counting on like $9,000 or $10,000. Like when you see that like 4-star general on the, you know, the doing press conferences, like chairman of the Joint Chiefs, like somebody like that who's been in for 40 plus years, they're making like $20,000 a month. And so when they retire the very next month, the military is still going to pay them $10,000 a month for their legacy pension. And so you've got these three different income streams that count as retirement income, right? And the reason why the military is so advantaged is like you start getting that pension from the day you retire. So you can actually have retirement income in the form of your military pension from age, you know, 40 or 42 or 43 if you retire at 20 years. Now, it's under the blended retirement system, it's not 50% anymore, it's 40%, so it's slightly less. However, the blended retirement system has added another form of savings for you, which is into your thrift savings plan, your TSP. And before we talk about that, what's really important to understand is that pensions used to be a big part of Americans' retirement planning. In 1970, over 52% of American workers had a pension just like the military, just like we have today. And that's why our grandparents, and maybe for some of you, like your great-grandparents, they might have worked for like General Motors or for the Public Utility Corporation or, you know, whatever phone company preceded AT&T or Verizon, like Bell or whatever it was back in the day. They might have worked for that company for 40 years, 35, 40 years. And then when the day they decided to hang up their boots, that company was still going to pay them money and they were in a pension. But today in 2024, only about 10% of American workers get a pension. And in fact, even as late as the year 2000, so when, you know, some of us were born and some were not yet born, who are in the military, still 40% were getting a pension. But over the years, corporations and companies have gone to Congress and they've gone to the IRS and they've said, like, this is expensive. We don't want to pay anymore. And so what's happened is it's gone down, down, down. And the only way for these companies to keep taking care of their people is to offer a 401k. Or in the military's case, the thrift savings plan. And so right off the bat, you have this sort of puzzle for retirement, for your retirement planning, right? And it's based on these three different ways that you can make money. And the Social Security is something that your best strategy is to wait until you're 67, right? Well, here's the reality. Only about 60% of Americans have something beyond Social Security. So that means two out of every five Americans will only have Social Security when they retire for income. they don't have any other savings. They don't have any other investments. They didn't work for a company that had their savings plan or 401k. They never opened an IRA. They never opened a brokerage. And the average in 2023, the average, yeah, as of July 2023, the average per person payout of Social Security was less than $22,000, right? Like about $21,000. That means 40% of Americans retire and only have $21,000 per year in income. Like, that's less than an E1 in the military, right? And at this point, you might be, you know, married. You might have your own house. You might be paying property taxes. You might have a couple cars. You maybe have a boat. Like, all this stuff you got during your working years. And, like, all of a sudden, you go down to $21,000. You know, married couple on average is getting about $35,000. So the $21,000 is like for a single retiree. But that's like nothing. And the reason why it's nothing is because the median, which means average, like average cost of living in retirement in 2023 in America was $48,872. All right. So that's an average. If you retire in, and I'm not picking on any states, but just low cost of living state, if you retire in like North Central Mississippi, you'll probably be more than fine on $21,000 a year, right? You probably only need about like 18 to 20, which is the federal, policy line, poverty line. But across the rest of America, on average, you need about $50,000 a year to cover your cost of living. And obviously, you're still going to pay some tax on that income, which means you need to earn more. And so you have to ask yourself, okay, what happens now? And this is sort of like where the military, there's this generational gap between all of the senior folks who are leading our units right now, who are some of the last ones who are retiring under the Legacy High 3, is, especially on the officer side, you know, that 05 commander at your unit is looking at, you know, on their 43rd birthday, they take off the flight suit, they take off the camis, take off the boots, whatever, and they go back to being a civilian, and they're going to get $5,000 a month. They're getting $60,000 a year. So right off the bat, they are going to get enough from that pension to cover their cost of living in retirement. And then in 20 years from now, 25 years from now, they can get reinforcements from Social Security. Because of that, when you have these old, this sort of like the oldest generation in uniform who's giving out, you know, retirement planning advice or like savings advice, in their back pocket, they've got the basics covered because they've got this legacy pension. And so they can get away. It's not smart, and I don't think many do. Like, very few do, because eventually you figure out you're going to need a lot more money than that. But technically, they could get away with not saving anything into like a TSP, IRA, 401k, right? The pension will get them there. Well, now that the blended retirement system's come in and it's lowered that benefit, it falls below the threshold, right? Like, whoever's getting 60 now before is going to get 48 or less now. So it becomes more of a challenge for all of us in uniform now when we're thinking about our retirement. Even if we want to stay in for 20 years, we have to start saving more. And when you look at it, if you really start to build it up, you can look at the income levels in retirement. Now, the average person who has a 401k or IRA, the average savings balance of that in the United States, it's insane. It, at retirement, is about $225,000. The actual middle point is a lot less because more people, remember, 40% of people have zero. So for the next 40% of Americans, they've got about, right around $150,000. And then when you include everybody, it goes up. But anyway, if you're just the average person with an average TSP balance, when you hit age 60 of $225,000, that's only going to add about $5,000 to $15,000 a year in sustainable income, right? So if you're just, you're just saving into your IRA, you're just doing like $7,000 a year, or you're just doing the minimum 5% into your TSP, and you don't retire to get a pension, you're going to have about $30,000, like a single person have about $26,000 to $30,000 a year, and a married couple is going to have, getting closer to $50,000. And so by having those two things, you start to get closer to where you want to be in terms of affording an average retirement, which costs about $50,000 a year. If you never save at all and you just have a pension, right? We've already said like pension plus Social Security will just about get you there. But that when we add all that up, when we add the people who either just have Social Security and retirement savings, or Social Security and a pension, that ends up being 90% of Americans. And those 90% of Americans live below what it actually costs for retirement. You can let that sink in, but that's why you see so many people who are older still working, right? They're working cash registers, they're working greeters, they're continuing to work because they didn't really plan, they didn't understand what retirement was all about. And they either relied on a pension or they had no pension and they didn't save enough into their retirement accounts and they came up short, right? And a big election issue, right, is should retired people have to pay property tax, at least up to a certain income limit? Because a lot of individuals, as property taxes go up, they end up spending their entire Social Security benefit just to pay the property taxes and keep their house, right? And it's really sort of like an unjust thing. But anyway, that's if you were just, you know, the average person, like you're in that 90%. But because you're in the military and you have the blended retirement system, you are automatically, you've been given like a golden ticket into the top 10% of retirees by income. And those are people who are making in retirement at least $72,000 to $80,000 and up to, you know, six figures. We're not even counting the ultra high net worth people who make, you know, $1 million a year. But you're going to be fine, right? Like if the average cost of living is $48,872, with the blended retirement system, which gives you the pension and the thrift savings plan, when you add Social Security to that, you're guaranteeing yourself at least $75,000 to $80,000, if not a six-figure retirement income. If you have a six-figure retirement income, you're in the top 4% of Americans in retirement wealth, right? Like that's an amazing thing. And I think it's worth just taking a moment to think about what's possible in your life if, you know, just telling the story of like, you know, maybe your parents immigrated here. Maybe your parents just have high school educations. Maybe you're in you grew up in a single parent home. And for whatever reason, you came out of the lower class, the immigrant class, the working class, you're not supposed to be on a track to be part of the wealthiest 4% or 10% of Americans. But by being in the military, and if you take full advantage and understand how to use the blended retirement system, you can put yourself right there at the top, which is, it's amazing. And for that reason, it's worth taking this, you know, sort of big picture thing about how the blended retirement system is a real great benefit to have. And it's not something you're going to find in many private companies at all. And it's because it gives you the pension and it gives you the matching contribution into your TSP, right? Most employers, jobs out there, companies, they give one or the other. And the trend is, you know, pensions are continuing to go down and eventually will go away. And that means everybody who's not in the military is just going to be throwing their money in a 401k or IRA and hoping they make it. But you can get guaranteed income, $25,000 to $40,000, $45,000 a year for the rest of your life if you make it to retirement at 20. And at the same time, with your TSP, if you follow a solid strategy of saving every year during those 20 years in uniform and maxing the matching contribution, you can be a multimillionaire by the time you're in your 60s. So the BRS is super powerful. Now, there's a few other, now that we've kind of like said like, okay, this is what retirement is, how does the BRS p- potentially help you retire early, right? Like take back control where you're not only able to retire at age 59 and a half when you can start withdrawing from your TSP without penalty. Well, there's something called the Rule of 55, and it applies to federal employees. And you don't have to just stay in the service for, you know, 32 to 37 years. You can leave and you can go work for like the Border Patrol, DEA, FBI, something like that. But if you leave a public security arm or branch or department within the federal government at age 55, you can start withdrawing from your TSP early, right? The government controls the TSP. They're your employer. If you work that long, they're going to hook you up and they're going to let you start withdrawing earlier. There's even the Rule of 50, which says, you know, as long as you're 50 and have worked 25 years, you know, you can, if you retire at 50, you can start withdrawing from your TSP, right? So you get these little kind of perks, side benefits of the TSP that maybe you didn't know that help you like move retirement up earlier. The other way that the BRS can help you retire whenever you want is that pension income that you would get. So you've optimized your investment strategy into the thrift savings plan. That's building in the background. Then you know you're going to also get Social Security as reinforcement. All that's coming in your 60s. So to bridge a gap from your 42nd birthday to your 62nd birthday, for example, that 20 years, your pension, if it's giving you $25,000 to $45,000 a year, that's covering maybe like a third or a half of your cost of living, right? It's any budget is every family, every person is different, but that's a big chunk of change that's going to help you. And if you also are getting disability, and the most common, it should be noted, like the most common disability rating amongst retirees is 100%, all right? So if you are not taking care of yourself or you're not like keeping your medical records up to date, you might retire at 20 and not get 100%, but then you're just going to have to go back and appeal and like try to fix it, because the way the VA looks at it is if you did 20 years in the military, like you're broken. And that can be another $50,000 a year, right? So under the BRS, you've got this pension and disability options that come into play that will help build you income. And in the background, because of Social Security plus your thrift savings plan, if you do it the right strategy, you're going to have $2 to $4 million in your 60s, and that's going to take you all the way the rest of your life, right? So you need to have some other investments that help cover the gap, which you can do through real estate or through a brokerage account. And the wealth and the income you get from that can help you fund an early retirement as early as, age 42 or 43, whenever you take off the uniform. Again, because that pension kicks in right away under the BRS, you have this optionality where you can legitimately think about retiring early after a 20-year military career. And as we said, with the TSP growing in the background, you're going to be super comfortable. You're going to have a wealthy retirement in your 60s without doing anything else. So that's sort of the big picture on retirement and the BRS and how it fits into the picture. Now let's talk about the components. And like the most important component is the thrift savings plan, which we've already referenced, and that's the military's version of a 401k. You save in there for retirement, and once you get to the right age and you're eligible, you can start withdrawing that money. And it can be in two different flavors, right? And this is where people start to get confused. So a lot of times you will just hear people say like, I max my Roth, or I'm going to save into a Roth. Well, Roth is a type of retirement account that you fund with after-tax dollars. So if I make $100,000 and I'm single, and that I'm going to end up paying about, we'll say like $25,000 in taxes, assuming there's no state taxes. And that means after that $25,000 comes out, if I want to save into my Roth TSP, which has an annual maximum of $24,000 that I can put in there, it comes out of the 75, right? So now I'm living on 51,000. I paid 25,000 in tax. I put 24,000 to retirement. Like that's a Roth maxing TSP strategy. Now, a true Roth maximizer would then also open an individual Roth, individual retirement account with a Roth flavor, and then they can put another $7,000 for retirement in there. And now they're saving $31,000 a year for retirement. That person's going to end up, when they're 60, they're going to have like $10 million. But they're living on like $44,000 a year from now until then, right? It's going to be pretty tough sledding for the next 20, 30, 40 years because they're paying so much in taxes and they're paying so much into their Roth accounts. Once they finally get there, because it's in a Roth and they paid the tax before they made the contribution when they were working, they're going to be able to take that money out without paying any taxes. And that's really the advantage of the strategy. And that's why most people go into the Roth. The traditional TSP allows you to deduct your contributions and not pay taxes on them. So again, if I was making $100,000 and then I want to make a $24,000 contribution to my traditional TSP, now the IRS thinks I'm only making $76,000 a year. And my tax bill might only be like $15,000. It'll probably be a little more, like we'll call it like $18,000, $19,000 or whatever. But it's brought me down. Generally, it'll bring you down a tax bracket. And so not only will you save just by having less income to report, but that income is now at a lower tax rate. So you might have, on your $24,000 that you put in your Roth, that might have cost you something like $4,400, maybe even $5,000 in taxes that you could save if you put it into the traditional TSP. The money in a traditional, because you save the taxes up front, though, when you are in retirement, withdrawing from the traditional would cost you income tax at that time. And so this is why almost everybody in the service, everybody I've ever talked to in the military, just talks about maxing out their Roth. They're like, well, I might as well pay an extra $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 a year in income tax right now, because at least then 30 years from now, I'm going to get my retirement income tax free. That's kind of dumb, all right? It's kind of a bad idea, but just, we're not going to go into that today. We're just going to get through this whole big picture on like what the BRS is and how it works. And so you understand, like, there's Roth and traditional, and you have the choice. You have the choice for your TSP to go into a Roth and a traditional, either or. Combined, the maximum you can save is $24,000. And that's, you can do that, right? Now, you can also have an individual retirement account, but the IRA is redundant. The IRA is unnecessary when you have the TSP. And why is that? Well, first and foremost, the strategy we're going to talk about next week, because we're going to talk about what's called a mega backdoor Roth conversion or rollover, and we're going to talk about some tax strategies for how you can take your continuation pay, your mid-career bonus, and offset that and not pay tax on that, right? Like, that's going to be the focus of next week. But just because we're talking about it right now, you do not want to put money in a traditional IRA, right? So there's TSP for you in the military right now. You don't get a 401k, you get a TSP. You may also open your own IRA. And for each of those, it can be Roth or traditional, right? In order to be able to do this thing that we're going to talk about next time, which is like a super military money hack for when you're deployed or stationed in certain areas overseas, if you have any money in a traditional IRA, you can't do what we're going to talk about. The mega backdoor Roth conversion is off the table. The IRS won't let you do it. So if you do have an IRA, if this is something that you set up before you came in, or it's something that you've just opened that account. You had the advice of somebody in your unit or like an uncle or a cousin or a roommate, you know. Hopefully you don't have a traditional, and if you do, don't put money in. If you already have, you can, without penalty, you can go to that account. You know, if you opened it with like TD Ameritrade, you can tell them, hey, I need to reverse that. I need to take that money back out. And they'll send you a check, and you'll have to maybe pay like some additional tax or something to make it right. But you want to like keep that traditional IRA like non-existent or totally empty. So you can do the conversion. But again, this is sort of like this, the reason why we're breaking it down in this 2x2 grid, if you can picture it, with the Roth TSP, traditional TSP, Roth IRA, traditional IRA, is that most people, when they're talking about retirement savings or any kind of savings, they're like, well, I'm going to max out my TSP and then I'm going to save anything else into my Roth. Right. And what they're really saying is I'm going to save a bunch of money into my Roth TSP, which you can save up to $24,000 a year. You only need to save about $7,000 a year. And by that, the time you can actually pull that money out in your 60s, you'll have $2.5 million. You'll be set. You're going to be totally fine for only about $7,000 a year of your own money. Because what it averages out is that TSP matching you get from the service is going to bring it up to about $10,000. Or in the case of senior officer, they're going to match almost your entire contribution, and that's going to be like $13,000 a year when you include the matching. And so like that 5% matching you get under BRS it's rocket fuel. That's going to allow you to reach your retirement savings goals at a discount, at only $7,000 to $10,000 of your own money a year. You don't need to max out your Roth TSP or your traditional TSP. You might in a given year if you need to catch up, or you might in a given year if you need a big tax break, you know, if you're deployed. Those are military specific exceptions when you might, but in general you don't. And if you're only saving, you know, $7,000 to $10,000 a year for retirement to reach your goal, since that all fits within your TSP, you don't need to also save into the IRA, right? Like you just keep the IRA, Roth IRA account open so that when you need to do the conversion, you can convert money back. And even if you never put any of your own money in a traditional TSP, your 5% matching contribution from Army, Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard, Marines, National Guard goes into the traditional TSP, right? So even if at this point you're like, look, I'll take your word for it, I'm going to put $800 a month into my Roth TSP, call it good, I'm not going to think about it anymore, it's too complicated, just realize that every year the government is putting money in your traditional. And if you let that go and you don't pay attention to it, someday it'll be worth $400,000, $600,000, $800,000, and it'll all be taxable. And you'll be like, oh, what? Now I got to convert it. And now I'm going to pay $200,000 in tax to convert it. When you could do it while you're in uniform every year or every 2 or 3 years when you're deployed and pay zero tax. Again, that's preview for next week. All right. So where do we stand? You've got your TSP and you've got the matching that comes into it. And the advantage here is that this is dedicated retirement savings that can be on top of your pension. And how does this benefit everybody in the military? Well, up until 2018, before the BRS came into full force, you weren't getting any matching, right? And that meant maybe you weren't really using the TSP at all. It also meant that if you were one of the 5 and 6 service members who did not stay in 20 years and did not retire, the dollar value of your retirement benefits from the military was exactly zero. You got nothing. And like that really wasn't fair. So the BRS was put into place so that everybody gets at least something, right? And it's a little bit of helping out young people, especially young enlisted who don't, you know, this kind of like financial knowledge is like pretty rare at any level, but you probably definitely will never get training on it from the military or anybody else, maybe not even from your family. And so you might just, you know, walk away with nothing, and like that's going to be a real problem, because later in life you might be one of those 40% of Americans who's living on only $20,000 a year and you're living in poverty. And like, that's not cool, right? So the blended retirement system really came into place to save some money on the pension, but also help everybody, 100% of service members, get the benefit. Well, you can say, well, I don't care. I'm going to opt out. Just be aware that the way that the BRS is managed now is that every single person in uniform here as a, you know, an E4, for example, 5% of that, that's going to be like an extra $1,800 a year that's going towards your savings for retirement. So it's not going in your pocket, but it is free money, and it's kind of foolish to turn down. The tap doesn't turn on right away. So the first 60 days after you are officially a member of the armed forces, whether you've, you know, graduated boot camp or you've commissioned as an officer, the first 60 days, you're not getting anything, right? And that's, it's called a vesting period. Basically, statistically, that's when a lot of most new joins like wash out. So they don't even want to like open your account. So you can't even go in and set up a TSP or adjust your MyPay. But after 60 days, the government automatically creates a TSP account for you. And moreover, they're going to start automatically taking. And the way you fund your TSP is it's called a payroll deduction. So like MyPay just does it for you. You don't have to transfer anything. So after 60 days, like you're automatically, they're taking 5% of your paycheck and they're putting it in to the TSP and they're matching 1%, which isn't a lot, but it's better than nothing. And then after 2 years, now they're like, okay, they're definitely sticking around. Like we didn't break them. They didn't do something foolish, right? Like they're definitely sticking around. Then you graduate up to getting the 5% match. And you can, even if you opt out every January, come around the next January, they're going to opt you back in. So you're probably going to have 1 month at least of retirement savings. And over the course of 20 years, if you stick around, the total amount on average for an enlisted member who sticks it out for 20 years, they're going to get on average about $47,000 to $48,000 of free money in matching DOD contributions to their TSP. An officer, well, it's just the nature of this being based on base pay, and so officers have higher base pay, so 5% of that is always higher. And after over 20 years, the average officer will have about $89,000 of extra money in DOD matching. And so that's a fair amount of cash, right? It still doesn't sound like a lot, but when it's invested and then it grows over the next 40 years until your 60s, it turns into like six-figure bonus, basically. And it really helps your retirement savings. Because again, if you just look at, for example, let's look at someone who's in their 12th year and is like an E6. Maybe they just pin on E7, right? And they're contributing at least 5% each year. The employer matching contribution is about $3,000. For an officer, mid-career officer, who's, you know, let's say they're an 8-year captain, they're each year their matching contribution is $4,300. So there's a lot of extra savings that go in, and you don't have to do that out of your own paycheck in order to reach your retirement goals. So as we just kind of wrap up this first chapter here on talking about the blended retirement system, hopefully what we've done is we've answered a few questions and we've clarified a few things. First and foremost, that thinking about, you know, leaving, for example, leaving the military to go out to get a private job, you know, you might be sacrificing not just the pension, you might be sacrificing like an employer match. I can tell you my wife's offer from her employer was less than 1%, right? Like just like an absolutely disgustingly bad match in that plan. And you know, next week or the week after, we'll take some time to talk more about the TSP and like other advantages of it over other retirement investment options. But suffice to say that when the BRS gives you a pension plus a 5% matching into the thrift savings plan, which has some of the cheapest investments around that do perform well if you pick the right one. You are putting yourself automatically, just by staying the course, 20 years in the military, $7,000 a year into your TSP, and then cashing on that pension, you're going to be in the top 10% wealthiest Americans when you retire. And that's like the floor, right? Like, you don't have to do anything else than that. And for that reason, you know, the BRS is really a great deal. It gives you something that nobody really has anymore, the pension plus the what's called a defined contribution, which is the TSP, right? And then we also explain how there's this, you know, within the world of retirement accounts that you have to think about when you say you're going to save into your TSP and a Roth, meaning a Roth IRA, that's all the same thing. Like, you might as well just put it in the TSP, the Roth TSP. And to when you mix in those two things, it's also all for retirement, right? So it's all locked away from you until you're in your 60s. So that was another thing that we covered today, was like the ages at which retirement is a thing that you can talk about and plan for. So in summary, you know, the BRS is all about helping you lock on lifetime income with your pension, as well as adding to your retirement savings and investing it over 30, 40 years. So you can be a multimillionaire in your 60s. And on top of that, you'll get Social Security sprinkled in there. And it gives you access to the Thrift Savings Plan, which has super cheap investment options. You can do Roth or traditional. And if you do it right, and again, this is, tune in next week, you know, next Sunday, the 22nd, we'll upload the next episode, which we talk about how to manage during your 20 years in career, how to manage these benefits, and specifically what to do with the matching contributions that are all in a traditional account, when you should also make traditional contributions, and then how to do what's called a mega backdoor Roth conversion to get them out of your traditional TSP and put them in a Roth IRA. And then we're also going to talk about what to do with continuation pay and what that is, because that's another major bonus. That's big bonus number three of the blended retirement system. So big bonus number one is a pension. Big bonus number two is a 5% managing. Big bonus number three is a continuation pay that you get at 12 years of service. And then big bonus number four, which is the last thing we're going to talk about at the end of the month in our third episode, we're going to talk about the lump sum payment option when you do retire, it can either be like one of the worst financial choices of your life you make, or it can be one of the best. So anyway, we've laid the foundation this week, understanding what the BRS gives you, as well as the difference within the TSP and like not getting your signals crossed on TSP, IRA, and other such accounts. And also when, like, what ages we're talking about this, you being able to get the benefits of these savings programs. So we're going to wrap it up. Probably went just over an hour today, which is fine. I'm probably not going to edit anything, even though that bug attacked me earlier. It was quite vicious, but we have, you know, low altitude air defenses. We got Stinger missiles and we took it down. But thanks for joining us. We encourage you to please head over to militarywealthcoach.com, where you can opt in to our weekly emails and be the first to get notified of new podcasts, new blogs, as well as soon as we drop any new products. You can also sign up on our website, not the pop-up, but scroll down just below the cut, and you can sign up for to be notified of our mini course. And when you do that, if you're one of the first 100 in there, and we still haven't filled up that roster, which is fine, you'll also get a free copy of our budget tool and our financial planning tool, which we otherwise are selling on Etsy. And then you can also find links to all of our socials. So social media will be kicking up this month again. So reach out to us on Facebook, Instagram, X, LinkedIn, sort of TikTok, maybe not. but we look forward to hearing from you. And we've had some great questions coming in from the audience over the past couple weeks about VA loans and home buying and retirement allocations and C funds and all sorts of stuff. So keep the questions coming and we'll continue to hit them up. So until next week, thanks for tuning in. Stay financially fit and mission ready.